This week's overseas correspondent is a woman in Tokyo, Japan, Motoko Kakubayashi. Kia ora, Motoko. Welcome back to Nights.
Kia ora, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And Happy New Year as well.
Yes, Happy New Year. This year is the year of the ox, or in Japan we like to say the year of the bull. And it's nice because everyone sends me little cars with little cows on them, which kind of reminds me of home.
Home in Palmerston North, Manawatu Dairy yes. Country.
Yes, exactly.
What do you say to people when they ask you to describe where you grew up, Palmerston North? What do you say?
That's an interesting question. So there's a way that my colleagues here in Japan like to introduce me, which is kind of stuck, which is they say, oh, this is Motoko. She looks Japanese, but she has the heart of a New Zealander.
Which sounds like a nice thing to say. That's better than, oh, here's somebody from a provincial town on the Wops down at the bottom of the Southern Hemisphere.
So every now and then they do, and there are other ones, but I think it's a way to, it's their kind of nice way to joke that I'm slightly different, but it's also their way to help me avoid awkward social situations. So I remember the first year that I was here in Japan, I caught myself in a lot of awkward situations where I just didn't know the Japanese way of how to do things. And so people would give me really dirty looks because I didn't know how things worked.
Such as what? You'd say something which they would regard as a bit out of place, a bit abrupt perhaps because you grew up in New Zealand?
There's that too. But I remember the first time a couple of university students invited me out to a group club dinner, and I kind of went along, and they ordered a couple of plates of different things. And one of them was these meat skewers, so meats on sticks. And I just grabbed one and put it in my mouth, and I heard one of them go, and I kind of looked around saying, did I do something? Did something want this? And they go, no. When meat comes out in skewers, the Japanese way to do this is to take all the meat off the skewers and then arrange them so that they're individual little meatballs. And then everyone eats the individual meatballs. No one grabs the meat skewer by the stick.
Oh, that's very much a New Zealand thing to do.
So that's one that has stuck with me for the whole time.
Now, there are a couple, not that I, before, I want to point out, I don't mean to be disrespectful to Palmerston North, because I have very fond connections with that city. But let's get back to Japan, which is a roundabout way of saying I should focus, Brian. And that is, there are a couple of stories on Japan that made the news here. One was a pretty big, serious news story, and that was the Olympic chief quitting after making sexist remarks. Tell us a bit more about that from a Japanese point of view, Motoko.
Yes, so as you say, this story made international headlines. So Yoshiro Mori, who's an 83-year-old man who's in charge of the Tokyo Olympics, he was sitting in a committee meeting, and he told his fellow members that he thought women talk too much in meetings, and that if women were to be part of future meetings, then they should have a time limit to how much they can speak. And this course kind of triggered a huge storm of protests against Mori, and he tried to apologize the next day, but it wasn't very heartfelt, so nothing really calmed down. But then, surprisingly, he, due to, I guess, the mounting pressure, he announced his resignation last week. And I say that I'm surprised because people like Mori, who, despite being 83, he's had a very successful political career. He was Prime Minister of Japan, and he's held other various very high profile jobs. People like him very, very rarely say they're going to stand down.
Why do you think he resigned this time then?
I think it is because he found himself in an environment where he couldn't, where he didn't have support. So had he said that in Japan, if he were prime minister, it most likely would have been brushed aside, partly because he's just too powerful and he has a lot of influence over people in Japan. And a lot of people in Japan probably secretly agree with him. But the fact that he is in charge of the Olympics, and this is such a world stage, I think he found himself in a situation where he couldn't, his usual tactics wouldn't work.
How confident are people in Japan that you will actually host the Olympics, the Summer Olympics this year?
That's a difficult question. It's I would be lying to say that everyone's very much for it. The popular opinion polls suggest that a lot of people want it to be cancelled. The main thing people are afraid of is safety. Is it safe to host the Olympics right now when Japan just started giving out vaccinations yesterday? But it's unlikely that anyone like myself or any other person down the street is going to get that vaccination within the next few months. Is it safe to open the borders, which have remained quite strictly shut to outside visitors? So I think in terms of safety, everyone is quite afraid that perhaps things are moving too fast. Perhaps we shouldn't be inviting people from hundreds of countries around the world to come to Tokyo.
How are COVID cases at the moment? Is the trend downwards in terms of the number of new cases?
It has got better. So just over the New Year's, Tokyo was probably at its worst. We were getting 2,000 or something new cases in the city alone every day. And since then, the government announced a second state of emergency. And we're in the middle of that. And the last couple of days, we've been seeing the case numbers go down to about 300 or so new cases every day in Tokyo alone. So the case numbers have gone down. But I think people are just still worried about going traveling overseas. And they're just very tired of having to stay home and to socially distance.
You've got a very somber anniversary coming up in a few weeks, the 10th anniversary, just as we've got a very somber one in a few days. I'm talking about the February 22nd earthquake, which devastated Christchurch. You've got something on a proportion, on a scale, which I think it's difficult for us to comprehend, even though we've experienced some serious shakes recently. I'm talking about the massive 9 on the Richter scale quake and tsunami.
Yes, so March 11, 2011 is definitely a day that everyone in Japan will remember. It was first there was the huge earthquake, followed by the huge tsunami, followed by a huge nuclear power plant accident. And it's difficult to say what will be done this year because of COVID-19. It's likely that a lot of the big scale memorial services will be downscaled or cancelled altogether. But when you look at what has changed in the past 10 years, so when this triple accident first happened, the government pledged millions and millions of dollars to the affected region, which was in the entire east coast of the country for 10 years. And this has been used to clear out the rubble and to rebuild schools, hospitals, roads, train lines. And as of, I think, at the end of last year, there were reports saying that most of the infrastructure has finished. So the trains are running now, the roads are all back to normal, and a lot of people can go back to these towns. But what has changed is that the communities really haven't been rebuilt yet. And I think one of the positive things that came out of this triple disaster was that it made authorities update, I guess, their what to do in a disaster manual.
One of the more staggering statistics in relation to the tsunami is that, now I think it's 15,000 dead as far as we know, but of that 15,000, are 2,000 still missing? Their bodies were never found?
Yes, exactly. And it's likely that they were swept out to sea, which makes it extremely difficult. So for a number of years, the government deployed people to look, to keep searching, search through rubble, to find the bodies that were missing. They did recover a number of them, but it's assumed that most of them had been swept out to sea. And so for these people, that means, 2,000 family members, you know, a wife or a husband, a grandma, a grandpa, a child, to these families, it's very difficult for them to get some sort of closure. And indeed, for the communities across the East Coast, what they've learned over the last 10 years is that people are beginning to forget what happened that day, kind of the magnitude of how it affected their lives. And so even though the government gave them a lot of funds to rebuild their towns, a lot of the major towns have done is that they've built huge memorial sites, and they've built museums to keep a record of what happened that day. Some of the museums, I think they've put in rubble, so crumped up pieces of houses, and one had a completely demolished fire engine truck, and just to show the kind of magnitude of what a tsunami can do. And to these communities, the reason why they build this is to educate future generations and to make sure people remember what had happened at that town, and that if an earthquake were to happen again, that the important thing would be to move to higher ground.
And the Fukushima power plant, is that still active?
No. So they have been working. So Tokyo Electric has been working very hard to decommission the power plant and the area. They have a very difficult job because no one has ever successfully decommissioned a nuclear power plant in Japan. Ever. And plus, let alone one that is kind of was badly damaged by a tsunami. And so work on that is going very slowly. The communities of that were around the area are still to be rebuilt. I don't have the latest figures, but as of last year, at the nine-year mark, reportedly there were about 40,000 people who still couldn't go back to their homes, who lived in their quite close to the power plant. They still can't go back home because it's not safe.
Because the radiation levels are still too high.
Yes, that's right. So they're allowed to go there during the day. They're allowed to go there during the day and pick up, clean up their houses, but they're not allowed to spend the night.
What about sickness and death as a result of the radiation?
So that is a very difficult, because a lot of people say it's difficult to determine whether someone who had, who gets cancer got it as a result of the Fukushima accident, or whether they had some sort of underlying medical condition that happened to result in cancer. But when you talk to people from the Fukushima community, what they say over the last 10 years has been probably more significant than worrying about cancer is just the stress of living away from home. One of the, I guess, the worst case scenarios is that these people who have been forced away from their homes and live now in evacuation, in temporary housing or in places that they're not familiar with, a lot of them become recluse and they become afraid of going outside. And in worst case scenarios, that means they also die alone in these small houses. And so for these communities right now, what they want to focus on is how do they support people emotionally? How do they make sure, how do they support them in a way that they can help them get over what has happened, help them move forward, so to say?
I want to end tonight's discussion with a little story of Japanese ingenuity. This is something I actually heard about on our afternoon's show with Jesse Mulligan. He did something on this, and this is a chap who you can hire to do nothing, right? Am I understanding
yes.
that right?
Yes, you do.
And why would you want to hire somebody to do nothing?
Well, I think this is a very Japanese thing, and I think it only happened, this job would only happen in Japan. And that's because people just want someone to be there without being judged. And so when you think about Japanese people, a lot what you hear is that they're very polite. They're very popular at tourist destinations because they don't complain.
Hello. Ah, Nights on RNZ National. I think we might have a go at talking to Mortical on her phone line, because we could try again on the Skype, but I've got a sinking feeling about the Skype. It just feels like maybe it doesn't want to go. So we're going to try the good old-fashioned copper line, because I really want to ask her about this. Just why is it that you would hire somebody to do nothing? You there, Mortical?
Yes, I am.
Good. Now, that's not quite as good as the Skype, but hopefully it's more reliable. So you were saying that hiring somebody to do nothing was a very Japanese thing to do. Why is it a very Japanese thing to do, Mortical?
Well, because I find that living in Japan now for 10 years, I find that people are very afraid of how they get judged by their friends and their family members and their work colleagues. And so it's interesting because outside Japan, Japanese people have this reputation for being very polite, for not complaining at all. Having lived here in Japan for 10 years, I see that more as like a mask that people wear, and that they see it as more convenient, that if you stay polite and you just agree with people, then they will like you. And that kind of eliminates the inconvenience of if I have an opinion, then someone might argue against me, and therefore they might think me of less of a person. And this is a huge deal to people, especially at their jobs, and also with their friends. And so to eliminate all that, being able to rent someone who does nothing and has no knowledge of who you are and has no knowledge of what you'll do in the future is somewhat convenient. It makes you feel good that you can actually do whatever you want.
You think the real service he's providing is actually the company, the non-judgmental company, as opposed to the face-saving aspect of having a companion with you?
I think that is exactly what he does. And I think what he does, it brings a lot of brings a lot of happiness to a lot of people in Japan. And I think that is something that a lot of the Japanese people need, which is just a place where they can express themselves.
Mortical, it's always fascinating talking with you. Thanks very much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Mortical Kakobayashi, back with more from Japan in about 2.5 months. Apologies for the slight break in that interview, but I think you'll agree, given recent experience with a dodgy Skype line, it's better to stop and try the phone line if you can do it quickly enough. And I think we did.